May it please the court. I'm J.P. Phillips. I'm here on behalf of Snowstorm Sand and Gravel. I'm going to take hopefully about 10 minutes to get through my opening remarks, preserving a few minutes for rebuttal to the extent that I have time available. This is a dispute about the proper interpretation of an express water pipeline easement. The trial court committed three central errors that I would like to discuss today, provided that I have sufficient time, each of which require reversal of its judgment terminating the easement. First, the trial court erroneously interpreted the plain meaning of easement by improperly adding restrictive carve-out language for diesel-fueled electric generators found nowhere in the actual language. The actual language is unrestricted and unqualified. Two, contrary to Lazy Dog Ranch, the trial court erroneously applied the four corners approach when interpreting the easement and refused to admit or consider critical extrinsic evidence that would confirm Snowstorm's interpretation of the easement. Third, the trial court erroneously refused to consider Snowstorm's equitable defenses of waiver, estoppel, and latches. On the first issue, regarding the plain meaning of the easement, Lazy Dog Ranch tells us how to interpret easements. The starting point is the plain language. The critical phrase here required Snowstorm, within 2 years of granting the easement, quote, to replace the existing diesel power plant for the Snowstorm pump with an electric power source. The first key component of that clause is the existing diesel power plant. That's a specific reference to the Zigen diesel pump, which was a mechanized direct drive pump that did not use electricity. The second component is a reference to the replacement, that you replaced with an electric power source. The language was general and unrestricted. Any kind of power source would have sufficed as long as it generated electricity, such as a gasoline generator, wind or solar generator, or even a diesel generator. The language does not say, as the trial court ruled, that it had to be replaced with an electric power source, quote, not another diesel power source. The trial court's interpretation improperly added words to create a carve-out for diesel fuel to generate the electric power. This court and the Colorado Supreme Court's decisions are replete with authority establishing that you cannot add language to a contract in order to arrive at a desired interpretation. Wyoming River's answer brief urges the panel here to commit the same error by adding similar language while ignoring the word electric, which modifies power source. Snowstorm's interpretation is not idiosyncratic. As established in the case law cited on page 12 of Snowstorm's reply brief, these authorities all recognize that a diesel generator can be an electric power source. This is consistent with common dictionary definitions and the Colorado Supreme Court's decision in Smith v. Home, Light, and Power, recognizing that electricity is something that has to be produced or generated using fuel.
Excuse me, counsel, do you think that the trial court was drawing the type of distinction that one would draw between, say, an electric car and a diesel car? So, for example, an electric car runs on electricity and mostly they get plugged in or they have some sort of a generator, sometimes a gas generator. But do you think that's what the trial court was thinking about?
Your Honor, I don't think there's any indication of what the trial court was thinking about in that regard, because it simply determined that the plain language was the plain language and that it was only reading the plain language, and it gave really no explanation for why it was reading diesel as a modifier on electric power source. It gave no indication that it was considering diesel cars versus an electric car.
Was the trial court given an opportunity to rule on these issues in advance, or are we for the first time hearing these particular issues?
With regard to the interpretation of the plain meaning of the language, Your Honor, that was fully preserved at the trial court level. All that is required is that you bring the issue to the attention of the trial court. For example, in Vera v. Springer and Steinberg, the court held that closing argument was sufficient to raise an issue. Here, Snowstorm did much more than that. It argued about the plain meaning of the language in its answer and counterclaims, specifically referencing that it complied with the requirements of the easement within 2 years by replacing the existing diesel power plant with, quote, a new pump and power source that generated electricity. This was consistent with what it argued in opening statements and what it argued in closings, and that the trial court ruled and rejected this argument in its findings and conclusions. Indeed, Snowstorm presented evidence, undisputed evidence, that it had complied with the plain meaning of the easement. Mr. Irwin testified that by May 2002, they had removed the Zigen diesel pump and replaced it with an electric pump connected to an electric panel that was run by a diesel electric generator that generated electricity. He also specifically testified that they timely complied with the requirements of the easement. The trial court never rejected any of this testimony and made no credibility findings. Indeed, Kraft's testimony was that there had been a diesel generator on the site that generated electricity, that it went to an electric panel to power the electric pump. This was consistent with Mr. Irwin's testimony. Accordingly, the trial court erred in terminating the easement because Snowstorm had timely complied as established by the undisputed evidence. Compounding its error, the trial court also excluded and refused to consider extrinsic evidence bearing on the interpretation of the easement. It applied the Four Corners Rule. However, Lazy Dog Ranch rejected the Four Corners Rule and required trial courts to consider extrinsic evidence relevant to the meaning of easements at a minimum to see if the language was ambiguous or not. Lazy Dog says to interpret the easement, quote, in light of all the circumstances, and that extrinsic evidence is used, quote, to explain and give context to the language. Winding River says you cannot use extrinsic evidence to change the plain meaning of the language. However, an interesting footnote in Lazy Dog, specifically footnote number 7, says that meaning can almost never be plain except in context. So the trial court had to consider this evidence to put the language in context. The types of extrinsic evidence that the trial court can consider include the circumstances surrounding the grant. Here, the trial court sustained Winding River's objection to the testimony of both Mr. Irwin and Mr. Zigen, the original individuals who negotiated the easement, about why the phrase electric power source was used. In addition, use of the properties after creation of the easement is also extrinsic evidence that may be considered. The trial court sustained objections to Mr. Zigen's testimony that he thought Snowstorm had complied with the easement, and that Kraft never objected to the pump site in December of 2002 when he purchased the property. The trial court also refused to consider other extrinsic evidence, such as Mr. Zigen's testimony that was admitted without objection from Winding River. They never told Snowstorm that it was in breach by itself. The testimony from Mr. Kraft in December of 2002, he was aware of the easement, and Zigen had told him about the easement. It makes no sense for Mr. Zigen, the seller of the property, to tell the buyer of the property that there's an easement in place if Mr. Zigen, the seller, didn't think that the easement existed. If he thought it had terminated, he never would have informed Mr. Kraft about the existence of the easement. In addition, Mr. Irwin had a conversation in 2006 at the pump site with Mr. Kraft, where Mr. Kraft raised no objections to the generator configuration at the time. Mr. Kraft raised no objections for 10 years after he bought the property, and in the meantime, Snowstorm continued using the property, pumping water, leased it to Everest, that continued using it as a mining operation, and was pumping water for that operation all those years. Snowstorm's interpretation is not idiosyncratic. It is consistent with Mr. Kraft's own course of conduct over the 10 years prior to filing this lawsuit. Indeed, the party's course of conduct demonstrating their intent prior to any dispute arising is actually binding on the parties, as established in Belmont Electric Services v. Dorn. Snowstorm preserved these arguments on the need to consider extrinsic evidence by during its examination of witnesses, where the trial court sustained numerous objections to its attempts to enter this evidence. Winding River asserts that an offer of proof was necessary to preserve this argument. However, Colorado Rule of Evidence 103, A sub 2, contains no absolute requirement for a specific offer of proof. An offer of proof is unnecessary where the substance of the evidence is apparent in the context within which questions were asked. Here, the context of the question and the dialogue between counsel and the court clearly established what the evidence would have been. In addition, there's no need to repeatedly re-argue these points to the court as established under Colorado Rule of Evidence 103, A sub 2 again, where once the court makes a definitive ruling on the record, admitting or excluding evidence, the party need not renew an offer of proof to preserve a claim of error for appeal. Snowstorm also discussed this evidence in closing arguments extensively, and then in the ruling by the trial court, it issued a bench ruling following the conclusion of evidence, indicating that it was not going to consider this evidence. Quote, I have also excluded parole evidence as to what the power source is, or what electricity is, or anything. And the findings and conclusions, which were drafted by Winding River and submitted to the trial court and accepted without edit, refused to consider this evidence. I'd also point out that the failure to cite particular authority at the trial court level does not preclude this court from considering that authority on appeal. We cited numerous authorities to that effect in our reply brief. That is also grounds for reversal of the trial court's decision for a new trial. In light of the fact that I've got about 3 minutes left, I'm going to preserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you, counsel.
May I please the court? Good morning. My name is Heather Hamlin, and I represent Winding River Ranch on this matter. The trial court correctly interpreted the easement at issue here. And one of the things that I did not hear counsel mention this morning is the requirement in Lazy Dog Ranch that the court interpret the easement using common sense. The common sense meaning of the easement, the common sense meaning of this language, is that diesel should not be the source of the power for the pump.
Ms. Hanlon, if that language is so clear, why did it take your client 10 years to complain about it?
Your Honor, there's evidence in the record that Mr. Kraft did not remember exactly the various configurations at the various periods of time. But more importantly, with respect to the waiver argument that they are making now, the easement had already terminated. If there's a question, there was nothing left to waive at the time that Mr. Kraft's company purchased the property. The trial court did exactly what the court in Lazy Dog said it should do with respect to interpretation of an easement. It considered the surrounding circumstances of the property. What the court said in Lazy Dog is that the types of circumstances to consider in interpreting the easement are the location and character of the property, the use made of the properties, and the court admitted evidence regarding the use of the property, notably fishing, for drinking water for the town of Fairplay, and also for the mining. The court considered the character of the surrounding area, and it also considered the amount of money paid for the easement.
So you don't agree that the court applied a four corners approach here and was limited to that?
Well, no, I don't agree, because that evidence was admitted. And the court, nobody ever mentioned I am, or you should interpret this according to the four corners. And the court never said, I'm applying the four corners of the rule. It considered surrounding circumstances.
What did it mean when it ruled that it was not considering any parole evidence? What did the court mean by that?
I think that what the court meant, and this is critical, because what Snowstorm was trying to do was introduce evidence regarding the intent of the parties, what they thought that easement meant, what they thought the language meant. And that's what I think the court was referring to when it was excluding that evidence, was that you can't testify about what you thought at that particular time. And that's consistent with the Lazy Dog case, because the Lazy Dog case said that the court should not consider the particular idiosyncratic meaning given to the language by the original parties to the agreement. It should be interpreted in accord with the meaning of an ordinary purchaser and what they would ascribe to it in the context of the parcels of land. And the court,
doesn't Lazy Dog also say that the intent of the parties is the paramount consideration in interpreting an easement?
It does, but there are many different selective quotes that you can take from Lazy Dog. I think that what the court was really doing in that case was really applying a sliding scale type of analysis, depending on the circumstances of the case. And so even though they are saying that the court didn't use Lazy Dog, didn't consider those factors, it clearly did by admitting the evidence of the circumstances surrounding the grant of the easement.
Isn't it pretty clear that in this location out in the open, that the electricity could not have been self-generating? There had to be some source to generate the electricity. You couldn't just plug it in to an outlet, for example.
I think that's right, although it could have been plugged. I mean, I don't know that necessarily it couldn't have been plugged into an outlet, because there was no evidence about that. There was no evidence that Snowstorm couldn't run a power line from its own property to the electric operated pump. So I don't think that it necessarily was shown that there couldn't be just an electric power source on that property.
Well, even so, any electric power source has to be generated, correct?
Correct.
From something.
Correct.
All right. So why is it that the trial court interpreted it as only being generated through solar or wind, as opposed to gasoline or diesel?
I don't think the trial court interpreted it as only being through solar and wind. I think those were examples. But there was no showing that a power line from an Excel line could be run through the through Snowstorm's property to the riverfront property.
So I'm having trouble understanding why the easement could only be interpreted as excluding any use of diesel.
Because that is the common sense reading of that language. It's talking about replacing diesel. And the court considered the surrounding circumstances.
It doesn't say replacing diesel. It says replacing that diesel generator.
Correct. But I think that considering the surrounding circumstances, that is the appropriate interpretation of that language.
Why should we consider the surrounding circumstances under your interpretation? Under your interpretation, aren't we bound just by the words?
Not necessarily. I think that the Lazy Dog case says that the court can consider the surrounding circumstances.
If that's the case, then why didn't the court allow the parole evidence in?
Because the court allowed some of the parole evidence in regarding the surrounding circumstances.
So why didn't it allow the rest of it?
Because the Lazy Dog case says, and I can't read the court's mind, but the Lazy Dog case says that the particular idiosyncratic interpretation of the parties to the easement is not appropriate to consider. And that's exactly the type of evidence that they were trying to get in.
Weren't they also trying to get evidence of, in of what the intent was? And isn't that permissible under Lazy Dog, as you just acknowledged a moment ago?
No, I'm saying that the questions that the court sustained the objections for were questions regarding, what did you think at that particular period of time when you were granting that easement? And that's exactly what Lazy Dog says you shouldn't be considering.
Well, how else do you figure out what the intent is?
By the surrounding circumstances, by the use of the property, by those factors that the court mentioned in the Lazy Dog case. The use of fishing, for fishing, the use for drinking water for the town of Fairline. So I think that the court's decision was entirely consistent with Lazy Dog, even though nobody mentioned the case, or nobody really mentioned the underlying principles of the case. And that's exactly what they're saying the court erred, is by not considering the case. But its decision is consistent with the factors set forth in Lazy Dog. I want to talk just a little bit about the waiver argument that they're making, and I mentioned before this issue that there's nothing left to waive when an easement terminates according to its own conditions. And it terminated prior to Mr. Kraft and his company ever buying the property. Snowstorm cites in its reply brief the Allen versus Nickerson case for the proposition that a grantor of an easement can waive compliance with a condition that had to be satisfied to allow continued use of the easement. If you look at the Allen case, though, the grantor of the easement waived the condition prior to any termination of the easement by refusing to let the grantees exercise or meet the condition. Now, Snowstorm cites no cases where the condition for continuation of an easement can be waived by conduct after termination of the agreement. And that's consistent with our argument that there's nothing left to waive after it's terminated. Also, I think the record is insufficient to meet the standard of a knowing, involuntary, and unambiguous waiver, which is what is required. The other equitable defenses that Snowstorm talks about, latches and estoppel, were never even mentioned, never mentioned once. The waiver argument was never argued in closing. Certainly, the defense counsel argued, yeah, Mr. Kraft didn't do anything for 10 years, but he never argued that meets the standards for waiver. And when he referred to the waiver argument during the testimony in the case, the court sustained an objection to the testimony that he wanted to present in support of the waiver argument. And defense counsel said, okay, I withdraw the question. And that is clearly signaling to the court, I'm withdrawing that defense. So that defense was not preserved in this case, nor was estoppel or latches, because it was never, those were never even argued.
How about the opening statement where it said that Winding River sat on its rights? Isn't that the definition of latches?
He never argued, though, and the case law shows you have to argue, you can present evidence, but you have to argue your legal theory in order to not.
In an opening statement, saying in a bench trial, saying that the plaintiff sat on his rights, that's not argument?
I think that he didn't argue that met the standards. It's the case law for latches. The case law says, fine, you can put in the evidence, but you have to make the legal argument. And he talked about the evidence, but he didn't argue it and say, Your Honor, this meets the requirement of latches. In addition, the court had no fair notice. It wasn't, that defense wasn't listed in the trial management order. Counsel never mentioned it once during the trial.
Except, as I just mentioned, during oral argument, saying that Winding River sat on its rights.
Well,
I can't remember his exact language, but certainly he talked about.
I do, because I've read the transcripts.
He did talk about the fact that Winding River didn't, well, first of all, it wasn't Winding River that purchased the property at that time, owned it during that 10-year period. But the court, and again, I think that that doesn't meet the standards that have been articulated by this court for preserving an argument. And again, this whole waiver argument is beside the point, because you can't waive something that's already been terminated. The waiver argument, I want to get back to that a little bit. You know, in order to preserve an argument, you have to at least give the court some notice that's the basis for your argument as to why this evidence should be admitted. I mean, the counsel below did try to admit certain evidence that was excluded, but that's one thing. He never provided the court with an argument regarding the legal basis for the admissibility of the extrinsic evidence that he wanted to get in regarding the party's actual intent and how they interpreted that language. And the offers of proof, counsel has said that there wasn't a necessary offer of proof regarding the evidence that was excluded. If you look at the record, there was no offer, not in the opening argument, not in closing argument, not during the trial, about what Mr. Zeigan or what Mr. Irwin thought that language meant. I mean, Mr. Irwin was permitted to testify that he thought that there was compliance, but there was no offer. We don't know what they would have said. And that's exactly why an offer of proof is necessary, so that we know that it was meaningful, that it actually would be a basis for reversal of the decision. The defendant's Snowstorm argues that if this case is remanded, that the court should issue an advisory opinion to give the trial court guidance that it should consider the reasonable use of the easement, and bases this argument on the Lazy Dog case. This standard is only used when the instrument creating the servitude is silent as to a matter that affects the operation of the servitude. The court says that in Lazy Dog. It doesn't say that this standard should be considered in determining whether a condition of an easement has been met and whether that easement has been terminated. And so I think that it would be inappropriate, given the issues that were addressed in this case, and given the language in the easement, for this court to issue an advisory opinion on the reasonableness of a particular use. I see my time is up. We respectfully ask the court to affirm the decision below.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
May it please the court. I'd like to first address a point made by Winding River's counsel regarding the extrinsic evidence that was admitted. Counsel makes the point that you can't read the trial court's mind. I think that's true to an extent. You can read the trial court's mind by looking at what it made its findings on, how it made its findings. It did so in the bench ruling and in written findings and conclusions, and nothing in either of those determinations does it show that it ever considered any of the extrinsic evidence that came in at trial. Another point that came up was that, and I believe it was by you, Judge Nieto, that intent is a paramount concern from Lazy Dog Ranch, and that should be a focus of the trial court. Here, the trial court said specifically that it wasn't considering the party's intent. That was at page 71 to 73 of the trial transcript. Turning to the waiver argument or the waiver defense, the trial court's refusal to permit evidence and to consider this defense absolutely creates a basis for reversal here. Waiver is a defense in the context of a case on an easement. That's the Allen v. Nickerson case. The Fenimore case, specifically Fenimore v. Stouder, says that waiver, which we cited in our opening brief, says that waiver applies to terminating a contract or failure to perform a condition.
Well, counsel, what are we to make of the fact that these defenses were not reasserted in the trial management order?
The fact that they weren't asserted in the trial management order is not fatal, Your Honor. They were asserted as defenses in the answer. Rule 16, which governs the content of the trial management order, says that a claim or defense is not out of the case unless it is specifically withdrawn as stated in the trial management order. And here, nothing in the trial management order stated that waiver was withdrawn. In addition, it was argued about specifically at trial. As Your Honor pointed out, the counsel presented evidence in an opening statement about this, and there was also an attempt to introduce evidence where waiver was the basis for relevance, and the trial court said, I cannot consider this evidence as relevant to waiver and sustain the objection. Therefore, Snowstorm preserved its defense of waiver, and there was no need to continue re-arguing that point. As my time is almost up, I would ask this panel to reverse the trial court's determination and enter judgment in favor of Snowstorm, finding that the easement was not terminated and remains in effect. Alternatively,
thank you, counsel. I see that your time has expired. I think it's pretty clear from the briefs what relief both counselors are requesting.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you to both counsel for your briefing and